So I had a secret question of the week lined up, and then I realized it was a stupid secret question of the week because I could answer it for you. The question was, would you rather attend every single one of your bias, your ultimate bias group's concerts ever for all time, or would you rather do a fan meet and greet but only meet them one time? So every single concert or only meet them once. And then I realized you hate concerts.
Abby hates concerts.
So I instead found the goofiest would you rather question ever.
I'm ready. I'm so ready.
Would you rather go through a zombie safari with BTS or have a pool party with EXO?
Okay, so let's break this down logically, as is myself. Do I think I would survive a zombie apocalypse with BTS as my, like, companions? No. We would fucking die instantly.
Instantly.
But would I have fun at a pool party with EXO? Yeah. Maybe a little too much fun, because the Beagle Line, but...
Beagle Line exists.
In terms of survivability, I would have to go with a pool party. Because I saw BTS in a haunted house, and I'm telling you, the only one who even stands a chance is Yoongi, and even then, he might still scream and run and hide in a corner. So, no.
Or punch zombies in the face, because he tried to punch like 5 people in that thing.
He did square up with a zombie. He did.
He was ready to go.
So maybe, yeah, but no, we will all die if I'm paired up with them, so I'll just go to the pool party instead.
Good choice. I think that's a good choice as well.
Yes, I'll survive that choice.
Keep up away.
So welcome back to K-Pop Parade. My name is Trinity.
And I'm Abby.
And we're here to talk about K-pop stuff again.
Again,
which I know is shocking to everyone who listens to this.
Yes.
So today we are going to be talking about the whole Wonho situation in depth. There is a lot to this.
Yeah.
A lot.
Weird things.
Yeah. It's been a weird few weeks in K-pop. The whole thing started back in March, and it was a joke that was made by Wonho that was taken by fans to be mocking the Me Too sexual assault movement. Minhyuk had pointed a microphone up to Wonho's man titties, as BM so affectionately calls them.
Man titties.
And Wonho said, "Me too, me too." And later, both Minhyuk and Wonho issued apologies. They stated they never meant for the joke to offend people, but like nobody really ever let Wonho live it down, which is ridiculous in itself. Like, people make mistakes and they say jokes that are insensitive I'm not saying what he did was right, but you know, he apologized, right? So nobody has let it go, which does not make a lot of sense to me. Recently, a TV personality by the name of Jung Daeun posted on social media that Wonho owed her a lot of money. And that was kind of a big shocking surprise. Starship Entertainment denied it, but she continued to post about it. And a lot came to light in the last couple weeks about him. Apparently, he had a stint in juvie. He was accused of petty theft. Then apparently in 2013, he was detained in Germany due to marijuana possession, of which he never tested positive for. All of this just back to back kind of like obviously hit a breaking point. Wonho left Monsta X, and immediately after he announced that he was leaving, Starship then terminated his contract.
The sequence of events was Wonho left Monsta X on his own so as to not tarnish Monsta X's reputation. But then I feel like even if he hadn't left Monsta X, Starship still would have fired him.
At the rate that everything was coming out, yeah, it wouldn't have surprised me either. There's a lot to be said about Wonho's character because there's a video of a show he was on and he was crying talking about how he found out his parents were bankrupt and he knew that he had made mistakes in his past and he had wanted to change who he was as a person. This is not an uncommon theme in K-pop. Taeyong of NCT constantly gets shit on for his past childhood mistakes. And people can't seem to let shit go. But yet here, Chris Brown can beat a woman and still have a very successful career.
No, I completely understand their analness for having like a perfect track record. Like, I get it. It's just another way to weed out people. I mean, this is such a competitive culture anyway, and they start them so young in general. What did we say? The maknae for the whole K-pop industry is like, what, 10?
Yes.
So I get it. They have to be perfect from the get-go. But they've ruined his life.
Essentially, yeah. Like, what do you do from here? What do you do when your dirty laundry has been aired out for the entire world to see, and you had to leave the industry that you have trained and worked so hard to do and be in? Like, where do you go from here?
I just don't understand their aversion to him because he had a stint in Juvenile. Which, okay, in the U.S., he was a minor, and those would have been sealed records. And I think within our laws and systems, that was highly illegal for that chick to release his records like that. I know she didn't release like any official documents, but the fact that she even said anything was very controversial, and she could be fined.
It seems like that's not like uncommon in the industry, though, with the way dirt and secrets come out all of the time. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like it's too out of the norm.
But you've just ruined a man's life.
Right.
For what?
For what?
Why? For like, what did she gain from this? Nothing.
Other than she's going to be super hated now. So like,
it's not even notoriety. Like, she got nothing.
And that's what I don't quite understand about like the cancel culture of it all. Like, you have no reason to say anything at all. It's not going to get you anywhere in life. Like, you literally are hated now. You're not going to get any type of fame or anything with this because people don't like you anymore. You ruined like one of the biggest groups in K-pop right now.
Which is not entirely true because sadly and very ironically, they've won more now than they have in the past.
I am super impressed with Mon Bebe. I can never know how to say the fandom name. I'm sorry.
I don't know. Mon Biebs.
Monsta X said like Mon Bebe, I think is how it is.
I know, but that seems stupid to me, so I just call him Mon Biebs. I'm sorry, Mon, whatever you are. I'm going to call you Biebs.
But the fandom has not slowed down with their protests of this, which is both equally super impressive. Every day they have a new hashtag for Wonho trending. They, like, fans literally bought out screens in Times Square.
Which is asinine. That's crazy amounts of money.
It's so much money. They are not letting up. Fans camped out in front of Starship until the middle of the night, until someone finally had to come out and say, we can no longer guarantee your safety. And it's admirable, right? Like,
it is.
They're using this platform to say, hey, he didn't need to quit. He didn't need his contract terminated. There are other ways for this to be fixed and solved. The problem is, there's so much legality behind a broken contract.
There is.
These.
And people are just like, oh, well, when Starship takes him back, he'll just sign a new contract. No, kids.
Like,
that's not how it's going to work.
That's not.
They fired him for a reason. They didn't do this out of, like, pressure from the media. No, they did it because they. Not because he deserved it, because they wanted to, because it looked good for the business. And they're not going to go back on that business decision.
In the same, it's, you know, it was the same thing as when Woojin's contract was terminated from Stray Kids. If anybody's minds had been changed, Woojin can't come back to JYP and Stray Kids. Contracts were terminated. There were fees and fines associated with if you break your contract, you owe a lot of money. Or even if the company terminates your contract, you owe a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much. He's not going to be able to say anything for a long time on any type of social media platform. Like, this is like not something that can turn around and be undone. There's no reset, undo, delete on this kind of a thing. And it sucks because I admire the fucking hell out of y'all for your determination. And I know that this hurts. I love Wonho. I love Monsta X. He is just the softest, buffest dude ever. Like,
the softest, buffest dude.
He was adorable in concert. Like, he's precious and he has a great heart. I know we want him back. It doesn't feel right, right? Like, anytime a member of a group leaves, it doesn't feel right. But I also just really need to tell y'all, like, please don't set yourselves up for more heartbreak than you're already experiencing.
You know what? I have a solution.
Okay.
So when G-Dragon finally hears our business proposal to start his own company, the first person he's going to contract is going to be B.I. from Icon. And then the second person he contracts is going to be Wanho from Monsta X.
Yes.
Done and perfect. Done.
G-Dragon, you got this.
G-Dragon, you're here to save everything.
Please save the K-pop industry.
G-Dragon, please save us.
Please.
If this had been a different situation where Starship had been, like, coerced into it, or maybe if this was, you know, an underdog movie or something like that, but they made a business decision to cut their losses, and Wanho was that loss. So.
It sucks.
It sucks.
And Starship, I mean, you have to think Starship's going through hell right now, because not only is it the Wanho shit going on, but then there's the Shonu shit.
Monsta X is having a hell of a month. And you know what? That PR person for Starship, I don't know if they need to be promoted or fired. Like,
right.
It's somewhere in the middle there, but I'm like, that kid needs a spa day. Every day there's a new headline. I'm just astounded by it. Do you think they just go to bed being like, God, what's it going to be tomorrow?
Probably.
Oh, what am I going to wake up to?
I will say it's interesting that now that a lot has come to light with Shonu, Starship is now threatening legal action.
Well, the situations aren't the same. So what happened to Shonu is that he was in a relationship with a woman, and after they ended it, she decided to tell him, oh, hey, BT Dubs, I'm married.
God.
And you technically had an affair with a married woman. And it was like straight up Hamilton shit, right? She was going to try to blackmail him. Yes. And he was like, what? 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 And luckily, he did go to Starship. And he was like, dude, I don't know what the fuck is going on. And they're like, hold up. All right. And so they investigated and they brought in the lawyers and they found out that he didn't know she was married. She didn't tell him. He didn't know. And then, so they're, like, combating the legal action that she's taking. So it's a big ol' mess. But
then the dude had fabricated nude photos of him leak. Well, Starship is saying they're fabricated. I didn't see it them. So Starship is saying, like, okay, we're fucking done.
Yeah.
They're at the point of, we'll fucking sue you.
I... Nudes, man. Nudes.
I mean, okay, let's be real. Okay, it's 2019. Literally everybody has nudes somewhere, right?
I don't have any nudes. I can't weigh in on this conversation. I do not have any nudes.
Like, but I mean, how many celebrity scandals in America do we get constantly with so-and-so's crazy nude photos were released?
Crazy amount. I saw a tweet the other day from a political figure who was talking about how women, you should never take nude photographs because they're only ever going to be used against you, and your private circle doesn't need pictures and you shouldn't do them. And then the first comment on it said, or maybe we could just penalize the sharing of nudes since they're private.
Exactly.
And I'm like, oh, look at that logic being applied to a political sector. What? So,
like, whether or not they were fabricated or not, like, it's shitty regardless. So I don't know who the fuck is out to get Monsta X in the universe right now. But, like, can someone put their voodoo dolls down and just let them take a fucking nap?
For real. Just, like, a day or two. Like calm your shit.
Put those voodoo dolls through a spa treatment real quick. Like,
really?
Leave Monsta X alone. I feel like that Chris Crocker, Britney Spears guy. Like, leave Monsta X alone.
They need a break. Yeah. Let's just break for Monsta X. Let's hashtag trend.
That's the new hashtag, the trend. A break for Monsta X.
Yes.
Okay, let's move on.
Let's move on.
Because that was a lot. So Super M got involved in a super cool collab recently. For being such a new group, they partnered with Korean Air which is the largest airline out of Korea. Millions of people daily are going to get to see a video of Super M singing and dancing, telling them how to be safe on an airplane.
That's fantastic. So Korean Air is actually one of the best airlines in the world. One of my favorite YouTubers, Mike Chen, he does travel blogs and he reviews airlines. And one of his favorites to fly on is Singapore Airlines and then Korea Airlines, because they just have such wonderful, great service. So the fact that, you know, I can fly with wonderful, great food, awesome service, and then Super M's on my TV. Hell yeah, I'm going to go Korean Airlines.
Not only are Super M on your TV, they're on the side of your fucking airplane.
Oh, all right, that's a bit much. I'm going to see Bake's face just flying through the air.
I saw someone tweet, like, can you imagine entering an airplane through Lucas's armpit? Because that's where one of the doors was.
That is a fantastic visual that I have in my brain right now.
So that's a super cool collab. Super proud of Super M.
Super proud of Super M.
Always super proud of Super M.
Yes.
In super excited news for Abby, Mamamoo announced they're coming back.
Yes!
In comeback news, Astro announced they are having a comeback, which I'm super stoked for. And then the big one that is blowing up Twitter right now is that EXO finally announced their first comeback of the year. And the teaser looks amazing.
I kept waiting for more faces, and then I got sad.
Yeah.
Because there weren't more faces.
There's only going to be a few faces.
But the theories have just gone batshit crazy.
Amazing.
They have pulled things out of thin air, but everything makes sense. They're clones, and then, like, Kyungsoo was the only one that wasn't a clone. That's why Kyungsoo is gone, and that's why he wasn't blurred out in the Tempo video. And, like, I read through, like, in a whole Twitter feed, and I was like, I didn't see 98% of this when I watched the videos. But everything makes sense now.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's crazy. Where someone's saying that the clones are from the Lucky One video.
Right.
Unrelated note, Lucky One is my least favorite EXO song because I hate the video so much.
Well, apparently it's the center of their entire universe. So,
like, it's like the Red Force cloned EXO and Lucky One, and now the EXOs have to fight the XXOs, and that
the XXOs
in Tempo, like, those shadowed figures behind, like, the frosted glass were the real EXOs trying to get out. So Tempo was actually the fake EXOs. The XXOs, I guess, and
oh my god,
and it's like they're trying to save the Tree of Life from Mama, and the whole concept, like the trailer, gave me very like Mama monster feels. There's also a theory involving power that the Baekhyun with the kitten is the XXO clone, and then Baekhyun floating in the water was the real Baekhyun when his body was like disposed of.
Jesus Christ. There's also a theory about Chenyeol's eyes.
Yes.
Something about his one red eye in power, but now he has one blue eye and it's like opposites, and that's how you can tell, and I can't even
there's so many. I mean, the like, go deep dive on these theories, because y'all pay way more attention to stuff than I do, apparently, and I love it. I live for reading through these theories.
One of the best theories is not EXO related, but one of the best theories I ever read was a Blood, Sweat, and Tears thesis.
Yes.
On Tumblr. And like, I finished it and I just sat in my chair for like 25 minutes, and I'm like, what the fuck did I just read? Oh my god.
Y'all are smart, and y'all invest your...
Y'all are like, smart.
Jesus Christ, y'all are so smart. So yeah, so that's super, super exciting. I'm super... I tweeted the other day, and I was like, EXO's about to come back and remind everybody who owns our bitch asses.
Yep.
Because we all, like, all EXO fans have become multis because EXO is so limited in what they do these days. But it's like, mm-hmm. EXO breathes, and we're all like, oh, fuck, yeah, that's right.
Yep, yep.
We don't do anything else but worship the ground EXO walks on.
Pretty much. Except not me, because both my biases are in the military.
Yeah, both your biases are in the military.
Fuck my life. Anyway.
I did appreciate, though, that there was that flash of the stone in the teaser, and it had all 9 logos on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, including Yijing's unicorn. Like, at least we get those crumbs. I will eat those breadcrumbs.
I think I said it in the last episode, but I cut it out. But,
don't say it again. Don't say the curse words. God damn
it. Kid's not coming back.
You are fired from this podcast until you're an OT9 stan.
I am an OT9 stan for life. He's still not coming back.
You shut your dirty mouth. That's the intro. No context, just you shut your dirty mouth.
Yep, there it is.
In last little bit of news, it's super interesting. SM Entertainment has signed with a Western management company called CAA for representation in all areas. So this is super interesting because not just like with Capitol Records, with Super M, which is why Super M got such heavy promotions in the United States. This is all of SM Entertainment. And I am super interested to see what this is about to be.
What does it mean that they have rights? Are they distribution rights? Are they management rights? Are they?
So the Billboard article, and I'm just going to quote it here in a few different places, says that this is the first time that a K-pop management company has signed with an American agency for company-wide representation. Lee Soo-man was quoted saying, "It's a great pleasure working together with the largest entertainment and sports agency in the U.S. We believe that Super M and NCT 127 will expand further to the global market together. Furthermore, this contract is only the beginning of our collaborations. And as an executive producer, I am hoping to contribute to our forthcoming global entertainment business by providing new visions and creating more meaningful content." Basically, it says CAA will explore opportunities with SM's other industry-leading groups, including live events, advertising, food, beverage, and lifestyle brands. So literally, it's just a company that is about to blow SM groups up in the United States.
Interesting.
But yeah, I think that's all we have in K-pop news. We are going to move to comebacks now, and there were a lot of good ones this week again. There were also some really bad ones this week.
Yeah.
There were some real, real bad ones this week.
Really bad.
We'll get to that in a second. First, let's talk about
IU.
IU.
So IU's nickname is the nation's little sister, and that's for good reason.
Yeah.
She debuted in September of 2008 as a soloist, and her voice and music are perpetually good and light and airy. She can really do no wrong. Between her acting and her music, it's no wonder she's one of the biggest names in not just K-pop, but all of Korea. And this song, called Love Poem, it embodied its name. It is lovey, and it's poetry, and it's soft, and it's something you just curl up in and fall asleep in.
Yep. I listened to it while I was driving in the rain, and it was just a perfect vibe for that. You're just sitting and listening and watching the rain come down. It was pretty. She's beautiful. Her voice is beautiful. This song was just soft and ethereal, and it was very calming. I liked it. Not a whole lot other than that to say. Like, it's simple and pretty.
The slow songs are harder to, like, judge.
Dive deep into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than it's just pretty. You put it on a bedtime playlist, and you...
Exactly. And you fall asleep.
You fall asleep. So... Next, we're going to cover Jesse and Jay Park. I'm actually going to bring our friend Zach in on this.
Bring it.
Zach has some thoughts in regards to the cultural appropriation aspect of it all. I don't even want to touch this one, to be honest with you. It was bad.
I'm going to touch it a little bit. Just barely. I'm going to caress it. So... This song is by Jesse featuring Jay Park. And Jesse is a former SM trainee, but she left SM. She said it didn't fit her style of music. Understandable. She originally debuted as a solo artist in 2005, but then in 2009, she took a 5-year break from music and left Korea and came back to the U.S., where she's from. In 2014, she returned to Korea and to K-pop and debuted in a trio called Lucky J. In 2015, she appeared on a show called Unpretty Rap Star and won second place. So she made a name for herself. Even though she was constantly shit on, she really was, she still kind of climbed. And then in 2019, this year, she left her entertainment agency and joined Size Label. And she had her first debut back with Who Dat Be. When it first came out, we were like, oh yeah, you know, it's her. She's standing up to her haters. She is rising above it. She's on top of a cathedral. She's taking no shit from anyone. And then we get to this. We get to Drip. And as while we say she doesn't take any shit from anyone, I am now wondering, maybe she should have taken a little shit from someone.
Someone somewhere should have said something about this. It's not my culture. So I can't.
It's not mine either.
I can't say a whole lot. The whole thing was a mess in itself. But the line that most people are having issues with is the line, diamonds blue like a crib, which I don't even need to tell you why that's not okay.
Do we need to tell you why that's not okay?
No.
We're not telling you why that's not okay. If you don't know why that's not okay, you just need to just Google it.
Like, learn about why people are so upset about this. People are claiming that people are just being social justice warriors, but at the same time, I feel like if it's an entire people's saying, hey, we have a problem with this, I don't think it's just social justice warriors. Like, this...
So I have, like, a complicated opinion on this. And like you said, it's not my culture either. I'm 99.7% fucking Caucasian, all right? It involves more than one, like, sociological explanation. But what it boils down to is this. They may or may not be in imitating a culture that they respect enough to garner their music towards. And their intention, I don't personally think, is to discredit Black culture by making music in their image. But it's not my place to say whether or not they did.
Mine either. So this is Zach.
If it makes you feel any better, I was not adequately prepared either.
That's all right. We just need you to monologue for a hot minute.
So we're talking about the video that I was showing you earlier.
The one that looked like an Asian Nicki Minaj?
Yeah, exactly.
And just your thoughts that we on the conversation we'd had the other day about cultural appropriation with K-pop.
So I guess my thing about it, and I'll be the first one to say on record, you know, I don't really know anything about K-pop. That's not really my jams. I am a big, big proponent and fan of hip hop. I came up listening to hip hop. It's been a part of my culture for a long time. You know, my father's Black, so I got to be a part of that growing up. You know, I started off listening to Bone Thugs and Harmony on cassette tape, right? So that's really kind of always been my shtick. And you can see throughout pop culture history, there are moments where, you know, we call it biting. There are moments where people come along and they bite on certain parts of culture, right? So it was interesting to me as an outsider of K-pop to start to see like the first couple videos I ever ran across, because I had moments where I'd be like, you know, that's a very hip-hop driven style of dance that they like to use. Even some of the characters in K-pop, I don't want to call them characters out of disrespect, but, you know, the personas that they put on sometimes can be very, you know, they want to wear the stunner shades and they have, you know, the flat caps from time to time. Not very often, I guess, but I see that very driven underbeat style of music coming out in K-pop when, and I don't know anything about traditional Korean music either, so maybe it comes from there and I don't know it, but I do know some about like traditional Southeast Asia music, and it's not very driven by like that heady bass line. That's never been a thing, but in hip-hop that's huge. But then all of a sudden I'm listening to some of this K-pop music and it is very, very driven by that bass line, and on top of it you have these, you know, these kids rapping in Korean. And I don't know what they're saying. I don't know what they're talking about. But then it was brought to my attention. What's the line?
Diamonds blue like a crib.
So that's just one of the lines. I even remember listening to the track that we're talking about right now with Trinity for a second or two. And she uses a lot of terminology that you find in hip hop right now. And so at the end of the day, what we see is this biting. We see, K-pop kind of drawing on Black culture, Black American culture, right? That's not inherently bad. The mixing of cultures is crucial. Matter of fact, a lot of Black hip-hop comes from mixing of cultures that that predated it. So, you know, jazz and blues had a huge influence on where hip-hop comes from. So, like, at the end of the day, cultures evolve, and they only evolve by communicating with each other. But where it becomes an issue of appropriation is where you see these mega pop groups who do this biting and they pull off of this Black culture, but then they get paid for it. And maybe not even, because I'm out of the loop on K-pop, maybe not even the artist per se, but record labels that put these groups together, these mega groups together, who are making money hand over fist. And it's only ever been an issue because of that monetization. You know, if I were to move, my wife, as an example, is from Southeast Asia. She's from Vietnam. If I were to move to Vietnam and all of a sudden open this intense Vietnamese restaurant and then market it as an American doing Vietnamese food, and all of a sudden it became popular, you know, at the end of the day, I owe kudos to Vietnam. I would need to be able to and willing to break off the culture that I have taken under my wing and attached my name to in some way. And that's only because there are a lot of Vietnamese people who, you know, live that culture who still go without. And the same could be said of Black culture as people do this appropriation. Now, appropriation in and of itself is not inherently bad, but when you are now making money hand over fist, and we still have Black prison rates upwards of 70-80%, you know, incarcerated members of prisons around the nation are people of color upwards of 60%, 70%, and 80%, depending on where you're at, where we have this systemic or institutionalized racism that still exists that keeps, you know, Black people from reaping the same benefits that other folks might reap in an economical system that they have to share in, that they're forced to share in. And yet you have these groups of people around the world now who are benefiting from their culture, the same culture that is being, in many cases, oppressed and being held back from that same monetization. I mean, if you look at it historically, even just in the 90s, as hip-hop was growing up, you know, NWA, they were huge. But one of the biggest issues was that, you know, they were in a position where they couldn't monetize themselves. So what did? They hired somebody who knew how to monetize their culture. And then on top of it, they were taken advantage of. You know, they lost out on, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of money that they should have been making because of their talents, their skills, their abilities, because they didn't have anybody advocating for them and, you know, helping them use those talents and skills to make that money. And all of a sudden other people come along and they'll bite on their culture and their talents and their skills, monetize them, and make that hand over fist. On some level, I guess you'd have to say that maybe it's not just an issue of appropriation. Maybe it's an issue of, you know, the people who control the controlling entities of music in its entirety. But a small part of that is those entities who control, you know, these kids' lives, knowing that this is what sells. This is what, especially specifically, an American fan base wants to see. And so they enable these kids who are being put into these groups to take parts of a culture that they'll never understand. I don't know who sings the line in this song about, you know, being a Crip or whatever, but I would imagine she has no idea what it's actually like to have to be out here in the streets, to have to be not even a part of a gang, but live down the street from one like this. You know, when I was coming up, there were parts of the neighborhood I couldn't even go to because of who, you know, I associated with, you know, and that wasn't even inherently my fault. I'm not saying I was out here gangbanging or drug dealing, but I had to be aware. I had to understand. And so on some level, people who come up from these elements, they have that right to discuss their environment. You know, one of my favorite hip hop artists of all time, T.I., you know, old boy Tip Harris from Atlanta, he talks about people who have critiqued him on the music he brings to the table and the experience that he chooses to share. And they say, you know, Tip, Why do you choose to be a part of this lifestyle if you know it's bad? Why do you flaunt it? Why do you propagate it so that, you know, you can make money and sell rap albums? And at the end of the day, you know, he's got a line where he says, you have to understand, we are conveying our environment around us. If you don't like what we have to say, help us change our environment. And so for such a culturally driven and drawn on style of music to just be picked up and for that nomenclature to be tossed around for the sake of making money and for selling tracks, it's almost an insult. You know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, and you know, with all due respect, you couldn't walk down the streets that I grew up on, and I'm not even from the worst of it. Like, I couldn't imagine you trying to make it out in Crenshaw or Compton or Watts. You know what I'm saying? Like, South Central LA, New York, the Bronx, you know, all these spots that are notorious for gang-related issues. You couldn't exist there for a day. So in what world do you have the right to bite on that and pretend like you understand any part of that culture, especially considering that at the end of the day, it, based on what we see, is about making money, you know? So that's really what the appropriation issue is about. It'd be different if the people who were out here listening to this K-pop, who are out here bumping this K-pop, were also bumping Pac and Biggie, or even like new artists like DaBaby or J. Cole, Kendrick Lamar. You know, if they were out here bumping Dreamville on top of bumping K-pop, that would lend more credibility to the situation, but they don't. At the end of the day, there is no paying it forward. There is no respect being, given to the people that this style of music comes from. And then now to see it, not only just in their style choosings for, you know, the music and the style choosings for their dance and the style choosings for what they wear, but in the words that they're starting to use, you know?
And I think there's something to be said for, you know, Jesse and Jay Park. Well, Jay Park especially has a tendency of doing that tiptoe borderline appropriation, but it's hard without, like, because I like K-pop because I like the boy bands, because I liked One Direction and NSYNC and things like that. And this is another boy band for me to latch onto. But again, this is where it comes into, like, where is that line drawn? Like, where do I have to go? Okay, that was really bad. I can't support that.
So there's something to be said that in her ignorance, while she was trying to be respectful and imitate this culture, she was actually extremely disrespectful because she doesn't know about it.
Yeah.
And that's just probably an education thing. Just like we don't know a lot about Korean history, they don't know a lot about American history.
But I will say, you ain't got a lot of brothers out here rocking Korean heritage on their tracks. That's not a thing. We don't do that. We represent who we are. What our expectation is for these kids to represent who they are. You know, all their other music, if it's about being Korean, I mean, I'm gonna be honest, I don't know. I don't speak Korean. You know, no disrespect. If that's what it's about, dope. Sell your music, make your money, you know, empower kids, whatever it is you're into. But you got to do it from where you come from, unless you're willing to legitimately come to where we come from and find out, you know.
Don't talk about things you don't know.
Well, and yeah, it's like a lot of people, when the appropriation argument comes up, they'll be like, well, why don't you hate on Eminem? Well, Eminem from the 8 Mile. I mean, he might not know what it means to literally be black in America, but he's at least from a locale that required him to understand the individuals he dealt with. And he grew up with a lot of, the impoverished, blacks in Detroit. I would never go so far as to say a Korean person needs to go and be black to be able to understand that part of the culture. But at the end of the day, you got to at least give us a little time to understand who we are before you want to bite on what we, do with our time, before you want to be out here trying to, you know, represent yourself.
Make money from our culture.
Well, and that's just it. That's the biggest part of it. It's right now, it's about the monetization. The minute the statistics don't skew towards poverty equating to being black in America, bite what you want to bite to an extent.
Yeah.
To an extent. I mean, that's still, that's still got to be said. But like, if the statistics were equal. If, you know, out of all of the impoverished people in America right now, it were even amongst whites, blacks, Asians, mm-hmm. Latinos, you know, all of those people, you can do what you want. But right now, you're biting on a culture. You're partaking in a person's, an individual's or a group of people's culture. And then on top of it, you're making money off of it. And to make mm-hmm. matters worse, you have the ability to wash your hands of it and not have to deal with the harder parts of being right now, like black in America. You have no idea what it's like to be Trayvon Martin, to be Philando Castile, to be all of these youths who have, you know, come across instances where they have literally been mistreated because of the color of their skin, you know, like even the, you know, Central Park Five, the Exonerated Five, you know, like those are all poignant examples of throughout American history where it is legitimately, statistically, and actually harder to be black in America. So for you to make money off of that identity and then wash your hands of it and not pay the same price that we've had to pay.
It's profiting off of someone else's misery.
Well, and it's damn near insulting.
It is.
I wouldn't even say damn near insulting. I would say it is insulting.
I'm just trying to be gentle. but yeah, it is.
And like, you don't know who Jay Park is. You have no idea who he is. Nope. But it's not new for him to piss people off for what he does and what he raps and what he says. And it's hard, like, because Jesse and Jay Park are going to try to play the card of, well, we were mistreated in Korea because we're American, but you still had the luxury of being K-pop stars. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much, because we didn't even know how to even begin to touch this, because we both said, like, this is not our culture. We don't have the right to speak on it. So thank you so much for your input.
Thanks,
Zach.
I'm going
back to listen to my hip-hop music. Y'all have a good night.
Bye.
Bye. So I don't think I can expound on that anymore. He pretty much hit it on the head, so we can just move on.
Yep, we're going to just move on to, how do you say this group? Hina Pia.
Hina Pia.
Okay. Second, like, can we remove the word drip from our vocabulary if it's not about, yes, like a dripping water faucet? I was bored. I didn't even finish the video.
So Hina Pia, obviously, debuted this month with this song, Drip. And they are made up of four prior Pristin members. If you don't know what happened to Pristin, just Google what happened to Pristin and you'll find a whole bunch of bullshit. But I really enjoyed Pristin while they were a thing. And so I had false hopes that these girls would be just as, like, cool as them. And I was extremely disappointed.
Yeah.
Extremely disappointed. The first thing I said was, oh, there's symbolism here in the music video, with each member being in a cage, one made of iron, one made of jewels, one made of cameras, and one made of bedposts. And I said, that's clever, but that is not enough. That is not nearly enough to save it. The choreography was almost non-existent. It was so simple. It was the same formation over and over. No level changes, no, like, feet, no nothing. At one point, they just step twice, thrice. And I'm like, is this it? This is all you got? This is your debut? I just, no.
Nope. It was, yeah, I got bored. I turned it off. I literally don't even think I got halfway through the video. Sorry. That's all I have to say about it.
I might have set myself up for failure because I was expecting too much, but man, I was expecting much more than that.
So next we have Victon. How do you say that? Victon, is that right?
I think it's
heard of them but have never listened to them.
Yeah, who the fuck is Victon and why haven't I stand?
Yeah, this was so fucking good.
This song was so cool. And you know I'm a sucker for a music video with a story behind it.
I mean, this whole video was a PSA for, hey kids, drugs are bad.
No, but see, I can't quite figure it out. When they take the pills,
they disappear.
Were they taking them to forget or were they taking them to remember?
I feel like they were taking to forget because there was that scene. So there's a scene in the video and it was really cool cinematography because they're laughing. Like there's this kid, he's got a camera. He looks and he flashes on the screen. And as soon as the flash is gone, everything's gone to hell. There's fire everywhere and
there's bodies, there's
dead bodies on the ground. And then he looks distraught as fuck. So I think it's literally like, I'm taking this drug to maybe have a good time and forget real life. But then when I come down from it and wake up, holy shit, wait, what the fuck is going on?
The only reason I thought that maybe the pills were to remember is because the song is called Nostalgia.
Right.
And so maybe he was wanting to remember a better time.
Maybe.
So I guess it's both, you know, want to forget the now, remember a better time, or maybe the opposite.
Maybe, yeah, it's...
Whatever.
It's hard, but man, these dudes are fucking talented.
Yeah. It was really good. I was super surprised.
A rapper with a mullet, that's like my bread and butter. But like he wasn't even like the one that stood out to me. There was the kid who had on like a reddish orange and black sweater. I kept rewinding because something about his voice, I was just like, wait, I want to hear that again. Wait, I want to hear that again. Wait, I really like his voice. Like he was super, super good. All of their vocals. There's a high note at one point in there. Like all of their vocals are incredible.
Can we talk about how much jewelry there is in this music video?
Is it just this video or is it K-pop in general? I feel like I always notice amount of jewelry in K-pop.
There is. But in this particular video, there was a crazy amount of jewelry. Like every one of them had 3 or 4 earrings in each ear, and they had rings galore, they had bracelets, they were just dripping in
Don't
jewelry.
Don't say the word dripping like, ever again.
Oh, God. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a new banned word. It is dripping and all of its derivatives. You cannot drip.
No dripping.
The issue, though, the issue with this song is it was just done. That was it. Like, I was typing out my, you know, summary, listening to it, because I listen instead of watch halfway through to make sure I get the full effect. And then it was just over. And I was like, wait,
give me more.
No, like there was the bridge wasn't big and the ending was just boop, just done. And I'm like, no, you need an end. You need an end. You can't just stop. Like everything else was good about this song except the ending because it was abrupt. And it was like someone paused my video instead. Like I was like, hey. It's been 4 counts. Wait, now, okay, it's been 8 counts. Like, when are they coming with the beat? Nothing. They're just done. I was like, why you do this to me? Why?
I don't know. I had zero issues with it. Like, the music's cool. Their vocals are fantastic. The video visuals were great. And to be honest, I think this was my favorite comeback of the week. Which is saying something because
like, I
had no
idea
playlist. Who this group was. And now they are my favorite comeback of the week.
Also, is that a mullet? Was it a mullet? It looked too long. To be a mullet.
No, it was definitely a mullet.
It was a mullet.
It was definitely. What else would it have been?
I don't know, but it was like mullet plus.
There was no business in the front. It was kind of just an extended
yes,
all around
exactly.
The head
it was all
mullet.
Party.
It was all party.
No business, just party.
Yeah, definitely go watch this video because hell yeah. Okay.
All right. Anyway, but speaking of
Jackson. So, GOT7.
Listen.
Abby likes Jackson.
Am I a Jackson bias because he speaks English? Or am I a Jackson bias because he's so sexy I want to die?
That's the
world may never know.
Biggest mood of the century.
Am I even a Jackson bias or am I just...
You just like his face?
I just like all of it. All of it.
Everything there is.
Every piece of it. Every inch of it. Mm.
So GOT7 came back. GOT7 was one of my first groups outside of EXO that I really, really got into. Like, I got into them, like, right before the UR comeback dropped. And this comeback was a very, very different sound than we've ever gotten from them.
It had a really old funk beat yes. to it, and I really liked it.
Oh, I loved it. It was very different. I loved, like, the staccato beat that we got more than, like the first verse and chorus were nothing but, a solid, small beat behind it. There was nothing really there, and there were some cool dissonant harmonies in this one, too. Yugyeom's voice in the first verse just over like a couple of solid beats was one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard in my life. Him sitting in front of that fire and just singing his light, airy voice. I was even super cool with Bam Bam, like doing like his mini rap over beats. Like, it was so different.
Where Hinapia was like very typical and uninteresting, GOT7 opened with their choreography on the floor.
Yes.
And it was so creative and so out there that I was like, yes. This is innovation. Like, this is just taking it to the next level. Because they could. Like, I was hooked from the very first minute.
Yeah.
Look at the leather. Like, look at all that leather.
You said it was a very funk feeling. And I think it was, like, very funk, very R&B feeling. And then, like, the second verse and chorus get real big. And the Jackson's rap was killer in this. He rocked it in this song. And this is what I have needed from GOT7 lately. Because their last couple comebacks just didn't hit right for me, and this one did.
I mean, it's called Call My Name, and I want to tell you that I will call their name whenever they want me to.
So Abby used to give me the heart. It's so interesting lately that Abby likes all these groups that she used to tell me she didn't like.
Listen, I still can't tell them apart, except for Jackson Wong.
Listen.
But, like... And
I was
going to
say, you know.
I can tell him by his giraffe.
You can't his neck alone.
It's 6 foot long, guys. Like, how does he go through doorways? Like, when they
so
can't
mean.
Find something, they're like, Mark, can you see
You're
it from up
dick.
There? And he's like, yeah, my eagle view. I can see everything.
You're such a dick. Mark was one of my very first, like, huge K-pop crushes. Like, I had biases in the couple of other groups that I was starting to get into at the time. But then, like, it was like Mark grabbed me by the throat and was like...
You know why? Because his throat is also very long.
Mark, like, grabbed me and said, I'm not letting go. You're going to love me forever. And I do.
Maybe that's where he... That's why his neck is so long, because he just takes everybody else's
I can't
neck
stand you.
And just adds it
I
on
can't
to his
fucking
neck.
Stand you. This overall 10 out of 10 comeback for me. It was great. Please tell me you've watched Wavy. I can hear a comment from where you are. Looking down where you wanna talk. Touch me, tease me, fill me up. Touch me, tease me, fill me up. Call me when it's after. Touch me, tease me, fill me up. Touch me, tease me, fill me up. Mess, we can have it up. If you're back, back it up. And take you where you wanna, get the gas in the tank. If you really wanna make it last.
I watched it.
That was so, like, disappointed sounding.
I didn't love it. I don't like English versions of things. I don't like them. I don't like the English version of Highway to Heaven. I didn't like the English version of Regular.
The reason people don't like...
I didn't like the English version of Love Whatever It Is.
Like, a lot of people are upset that this song ended up being, like, a sexy version because it's in English. And I'm like, but the original was a sexy... Like, the Touch Me, Tease Me, Feel Me Up, that didn't change. Like, you just know what they're saying. Now, I do have an issue with them making My Little Maknae say, make it clap.
Oh, I did notice that.
Because that should not have been a thing. My baby Maknae needs to never say words like that alone again. But
yeah,
I also didn't mind this being like a sexy song. Like, Kun had teased that there was going to be like an English song. Everybody kind of assumed it was going to be Moonwalk since that was the title track of the album. But like, for me, it was like, okay, this is cool. Like, this is we don't even speak the same language, but you're hot, I'm hot, let's have a one-night stand. And I think that's okay.
And I'm like, There could have been better executions for that. And a better execution for that was Intuit's song called Sorry for My English, where they just, they tell them that they love you, but they can't speak English. It's a great song. We should all listen to it. But
amazing. So big comebacks this week were Hyuna and Dawn. E-Dawn is not going by E-Dawn anymore because that was his Pentagon. I mean, he's just going to go by Dawn.
And the question is, who won?
The clear answer is Dawn.
The melon answer is Hyuna. But our answer here at K-Pop Parade is Dawn won. Sing this song.
The song was cute. The song was, you know, Flower Shower is the name of it. It was very floral and pretty. I really didn't enjoy the chorus drop all that much, but I love Hyuna, so I'm still going to worship the ground that she walks on.
In her weird shoes.
I was waiting. Did you see? She posted a picture, and she's in this little dress with some cowboy boots, and I was like, oh, Abby would hate those.
God damn shoes! In Hyuna's defense, I also hated Dawn's shoes in his music video.
I don't know why you have a problem with shoes.
Because I'm a weird person. Okay, but speaking of Hyuna, it was fun. I always kind of figured that if anybody was going to go down the rabbit hole and own Wonderland, it would be Hyuna.
You're absolutely right.
Like, she shows off, you know, how well she dances, how many fucks she doesn't give, and in a cute way, and then how talented she is at both rapping and singing. Good, cool. Hyuna, forever. Let's
sweet
go.
Queen. And then Dawn.
Dawn. 나의 텅빈 맘은 누가 채울까요? 묻고 싶은 때 부모님은 자요. 돈으로 행복을 못 산다면 어떻게 사는 건가요? 살 수 있는 건가요? 뻔한 대답하지 마라. 와닿지 않아 이게 맞나요? Don't you be a liar. 정답을 선물 I was super impressed, and I wasn't expecting to be impressed because I don't like rap songs. But this was a very, like, So Far Away by August D vibe. And honestly, there is nothing better than, like, blatantly saying what everyone else is struggling with, looking at you, winner. And I am living in this generation of K-pop where we are not afraid to, like, speak our mind, and we're finally, like, ready to ask questions because we're strong enough to admit that we don't know the answers to them. Dawn has always been a weird kid in my mind, very much like GD in his fashion and aesthetic choices, especially those weird cowboy boots.
Yeah.
But I watched his little intro that he did before the music video, and it clicked so many things for me, like his insecurities, his loneliness, and how he said everything just gets worse at night because when you're by yourself in the darkness, everything that you hate comes back. But then the one thing that really cemented it for me was his love for dance. I didn't pick up on that while he was with Pentagon, but I sure as hell could see it in every line of his body when he was doing his music video. He is hands down the winner.
So we knew kind of what Hyuna was going to do. And to be honest, I was kind of surprised it wasn't more branched out than what we had already heard from Hyuna when she was with Cube. But I guess when you're like the biggest, the reason Cube is making money, you can kind of do whatever you want with Cube. And so she, you know, it was different than what we had heard, but also not super different than what we had already heard from Hyuna. This, I was expecting more of what I had heard Dawn produce with Pentagon, because they did songs that he produced, and his rap songs that he would write with Yuto and Woosook, like, were very heavy rap songs. And this was a different style. I found the concept of talking to money like it's a person very interesting, and it worked. And he, like you said, he's rapping about something that we all feel. Like, why do I need you so bad? And you're like, who is he talking to? And then finally it clicks, like, he's talking to money. Like, he is talking to money about needing money and like how it controls everything that we, and he's right. And I loved this creative outlook that he has going on.
It was really unapologetic.
Yes.
Because he was like, are you going to think I'm a snob because I'm asking? And then he said, it's better to be a snob than penny pincher.
Yes.
And like, I'm for it. Oh, man. It was just, I really, really liked it.
I'm sure we're going to get more of like what I was expecting of like what he had done with Pentagon a few times. But like, I'm so excited to see what else he puts out in the future now that he has his own creative control. So moving on to the one I was super, super excited for this week is One Team. Take it slow, my lady. Good pack up. So, 이 밤이 지난 내일 밤이어도 we keep hustle at the end. 끝이 걱정하면 시작하기엔 적성에 안 맞아. And there ain't no answer. Light it up. 어두운 이 방 안에 선명히 네 기억 속이 다 담아. Light it up. 이제 눈 감아. 잊으려 애써도 still I'm in your mind. We are about to make this so hot. Break down in ocean. Make this go on fire. Break, body on fire, fire. Make this song hot. Break, coming up some. Make this heart on fire. Break, break, die on fire, fire. So One Team debuted earlier this year, Vibe, and it was a very cute debut. It was very reminiscent of like The Shines by Pentagon, kind of cute, boppy, adorable, cool. Their next one was called Rollin' Rollin', and that was like a chill summer vibe song. They shot it in California. It was very relaxed and laid back, and it was super cool. And then they got to do a dark, sexy concept, and I and living, because all that this did for me was solidify that One Team is able to fit into many molds.
The whole chorus is a dance break, and while I appreciate their choreo because it was both complicated and simple at the same time, they didn't really have a song. They had a club dance music. It wasn't a song. Also, why are all of these songs ending without a bridge? Like, this happened again. This song just ends. There's no bridge. There's no ending. There's no outro. It's just bloop. Like, why is this? We need ends, people. We need finality. We need a bookend. Like, why do you keep doing this to me? It's on my head's on the chopping block and you just cut off my head.
I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it fit the song well. I was, BC is my bias. And so I loved that ending rap that he got, and it was super cool. And I just think that for me, this was more of a point to prove Team One has gotten so used to their light and airy songs, even on their other two mini albums, though the other songs on the mini albums fit the title track. So it's like, the Vibe era had a song called About You, and it was, there's something about you, and, you know, I just want to get to know who you are, and, you know, it's super cute. And then they had a rap song on there called Countdown, but even then it wasn't like a hard rap. And then Rollin' Rollin' had like a song called Ice in the Cup that was like, hey, we're just having a chill little party, but it's just cool and life is fun, and it fit the Rollin' Rollin' vibe very well. And then this just to me was a, we can do many different styles. We can do many different things. And I think that they did it very well. The outfits were super cool. The visuals were cool. Their choreography was awesome. I don't tend to have problems with songs that kind of have more dance breaks for, but that's also a very prominent difference between you and I is you don't want songs that have dance breaks in them.
No. We'll make this distinction. I want songs. I want songs. I don't want a mashup or a mix or
a club track,
a remix or a dance break. I want a song.
So next we're going to talk about the boys real quick, which you also hate their name.
Yes, I absolutely do, because of all the money and all the branding they had, they chose the boys. Really? Really?
Oh, this song was called Tattoo, and it is their Japanese comeback. I really liked it. It was nothing, you know, I didn't think it was anything outstanding, but I really enjoyed it. I really liked the kind of staccato beats of the verse. The raps were cool. Jacob Bey is like the most boyfriend material in the world, and his voice is so pretty. They have a lot of solid vocals, but I liked the song a lot. I thought it was definitely listen to multiple times worthy.
For me, it reminded me of like classic EXO back in like OT12 days. And maybe it's because there are so many members that they have that like full choir behind the vocalist. It makes it feel really full, like a well-rounded song with a lot of chord progressions going. And it was good. I liked that bounty. In the music video, there were a lot of wrists. Like, I noticed there was just a lot of twirling of the hands and lots of wrists. Like, oh, look at my wrists. They're so beautiful. And I'm like, there's wrists everywhere. Other than that, yeah, I mean, it was fine. Nothing too special. I always get intimidated by the Japanese debuts because sometimes I will listen to it and I'm like, oh, that's Korean. Just kidding. No, it's not Korean. What is that? It's Japanese. Nope. Just kidding. That's Mandarin. Wait. And then I feel stupid.
And then I feel stupid. So, you know what I did really, really like, though? Amber.
Amber. She's my beautiful pineapple llama. I love perfect. Her. She can do no wrong. Her and IU, no wrong. They can never do anything bad. I'm replacing you with other people.
So this song was such a cool concept on a fuck you song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I was expecting, but like it wasn't this, but this was perfect.
The song was cool, and the vibe of it went a lot further into an area that she is usually very hesitant to enter, which was like sexuality and romance. And I think that's because SM never let her go there. But now she's not with SM. And I know this is the overarching thing of all K-pop, that as soon as they leave their management company, they're finally free to do whatever they want. And so I love that she portrays herself as an androgynous K-pop idol, which is awesome. And she's like doing her true self. And everybody's always kind of had their theories about which way she leaned on, you know, the sexuality spectrum. And of course, that's her own personal thing. But I think this was cool because she was like, I can make out with dudes and I can also replace you with girls. I can do whatever the fuck that I want because
I also love how vague she left it with, I'm replacing you with other people. Like not other guys, not other girls, like not just I'm replacing you with other people.
Mm-hmm. With friends, with family, with other hookups, like I'm just replacing you.
And like this was such a, like I never expected, she looked so hot with her sleeveless shirt and all of her tattoos, and then she like makes out with a dude in front of her ex and he like grabs her hips and pulls them into his, and like
he was super good,
like everything about this was so sexy. And also, can like Amber tie me to a chair, and like I don't know, everything about it was just, but the song in itself was good as well. I really
like
everything about this.
I like most of the stuff that she's been putting out. It's all been really quality music, and I'm glad that she finally gets to do the stuff she wants. I saw a tweet today that it was Eric Nam and Ailee, and they're both really good personal friends with her. And she, back when she recorded this video, she sent them screenshots of her making out with this dude. And then finally, the music video dropped, and Eric Nam was like, oh my god, this is the video! This is the one!
I love
it. It's just funny to watch that friendship. So, I love Amber. She can do no wrong. She can hang out with Pentatonix, or she can hang out with FX, and she has this giant span of like friends and like adaptability, and it's awesome, and I'm jealous, and I want her to be my friend.
So
Amber, be my friend.
Is this gonna be just our regular theme of, hey, let's invite a K-pop idol to come be on our podcast so we can just praise them for 45 minutes to an hour? Because Amber,
yep,
come be on our
Amber Lou, this is your formal invitation to come let us praise you.
Right. So yeah, Amber's comeback was freaking incredible. Was super, super blown away by it. Loved it. And I think that's finally all that we have for this week, guys.
That's it. That's so, us. So
thank you guys again so much for taking the time to listen and pay attention to us talking. You can always find us on the Twitters at K-Pop Parade, K-P-O-P-A-R-A-D-E. A huge thank you to Zach for coming in and shining some light on a topic that we don't really have the area to talk about. So we're super thankful that we have friends and who talk to us about things real and put things in perspective for us. So huge thank you to Zach, and thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you later.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.